forgiveness. I want to share a little bit with you, and maybe engage you in a little bit of a conversation of sorts. If you don't have, that's fine. But if you happen to have a push in front of you, Parshas Balak, that'll be great. And if you also have Pirkei Avos, that'll be great. If not, I'll tell you everything you need to know. So we know that this week's Parshas Balak, and the Parsha begins by introducing us to two individuals, the Balak and the Bilam. And Balak sends, of course, Shluchim messengers to go ahead and to commission Bilam that he should use his divine powers to curse Klal Yisrael. And Balak is very concerned and threatened by the growth of Klal Yisrael, their success, and he realizes that it's going to take some supernatural measures to overcome them. And he sends messengers, and as we know, Bilam seems to salivate at the opportunity to go ahead and curse Klal Yisrael, but at the same time recognizes that this is not something that he can simply choose to do, that it's not within his control, that it's ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's going to determine whether or not he'll be able to curse. If he does, whether there'll be any effect whatsoever. And as we know, Balak is persistent and continues to send people to go ahead and to bribe him and to entice him to accept the shlichus. And the Torah tells us, if you have a chumash in front of you, great. If not, don't worry, but we're in Perek Chav Beis, Pasuk. Yud Zayin. So, actually we'll go back to Tezayin. Vol Bilam. So the sorry Balak come to Bilam. But Yomel and they say, Ko Amar Balak ben Sipor, Al Nosi Manami Alocha Eloi. Please, do not turn me down. Come to me. Come together with my messengers. Ki chabed chabed chamaod. I will honor you greatly. Whatever you ask of me, I'll do. And I need your help right now to curse the people. So Bilam responded, and Bilam says something which sounds to me like one of the frumous psukim of the Torah. He says, even Balak will give me all of his entire household full of silver and gold, I would not be able to go ahead and to override whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, lasos katano gedola, to do some small or big. I have no power without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha. So says Bilam. So when you look at this, you get the impression that Bilam is a really, really, he's a frum guy, so to speak. He has tremendous emunah. He has this incredible awareness and this understanding that he can't do anything without HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says to Balak, you can give me everything in the world. You can offer me all the money, all of the money that you have. A household, your whole household full of silver and gold that I still couldn't do anything. But we know that Chazal is quoted over here by Rashi and very critical of Bilam when he says this. Lamadu says Rashi, Shenafsha Rechava, U'mechabin Maman Acherim. You see from here that Bilam had big eyes. And he was someone who desired other people's possessions. Omar, he says, Roilo Litin Kol Kesav Azov Shalom. He says, really? Balak should pay me all the money that he has. Because if he goes ahead and he hires mercenaries to go ahead and to carry out this mission, maybe they'll succeed, maybe they won't. Me, 100% will succeed. Money back guaranteed. So Bilam, Chazal say over here, a tremendous amount of gaiva. And not only that, he had tremendous taivas hamamon, and he loved other people's money. So Chazal looked very critically upon Bilam, and again, understandably, Bilam is not quite, is not really one of the nicer people in all the Torah. But it's interesting that this particular pasuk is one which we would have thought, displays a more, a more honorable side of Bilam, the part of Bilam which displays his tremendous understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really controls the world. And here Rashi throws the flag and he says, no. That even this displays, a very negative characteristic of Bilam. Okay, so that's this Rashi. It's relatively simple. Now, there's a famous question which many of the Mefarshim on Pirkei Avos ask, and that is based on a Mishnah in Perek Vav, Mishnah Tes, and Pirkei Avos. Again, if you don't have it in front of you, it's fine. I'll tell you very quickly. Amar Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. Forgive me for going so quickly. I'm giving a shiur at 10:20. In the library. Yosef ben Kisma said the following, one time I was walking, a person came and he approached me. He said hello to each other. Amr Lee said, Rebbe, Mezamakamata, where do you come from? I come from a great city of many chachamim, many sofrim. I come from Lakewood, New Jersey. Amar Lee says, Rebbe, Ritzoncha shetadori marim mekomenim, v'ani etlocha el ha'lofim dinari zav ha'avarim tovaz magalimus. He says, Rebbe, you want to come live with me? If you come where we live, I will give you, it sounds like it's the equivalent of millions and millions of dollars. Amar Tilo, so I said to him, Ematanosin li kol kesev zav ha'avarim tovaz magalimus ba'olam, and yidor el makum tovar. He says, you can give me all the money in the world. Not going to make a difference. I'm only going to live in a makom tov. So, it's not the end of the Mishnah, but this is where we'll stop. He quotes the Mishnah quotes the pasuk Tehillim, Tovli Taris Picha, Miyafi Kesav Kesav. So, here you have two individuals, Bilam and Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. Bilam, so he says, if you give me all the money in the world, I can't do anything without the consent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Chazal say, oh, that's terrible. What do you see? You see that all he thinks about is other people's money. And over here, Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma says something which sounds remarkably similar. He says, you can give me all the money in the world, it's not going to make a difference. I'm not leaving Lakewood, New Jersey. And the Mishnah doesn't say anything about Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, but the impression you seem to get is that this was a very honorable thing. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma is being lauded by Chazal over here for his tremendous commitment to his values. And he understood the importance of living in a Makom Torah. And he says, even if you give me all the money in the world, so I would never leave. So the question, which should be obvious at this point, is why is it that we are so critical of Bilam, we are so praiseworthy of Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma? You know, when you think about it, really, they seem to be saying virtually the same thing. You hear the question? Good. So give me some answers. I'm aware of like four or five different answers. Let me hear what you have to say. Yeah.
The offer is different in the first place for both.
What do you mean?
Balak offers Bilam whatever he wants, and then he responds about money, and then whoever the student was talking in the Mishnah says, I'll give you money if you come live with me.
Excellent, very good. So one explanation, I've seen this in the Torah Tumimah, could be able to say as well. Torah Tumimah has a parish on Pirkei Avos called Baruch Sh'omar. And he writes that teretz. He says one of the obvious differences between the two, and this is where it's helpful to have the makaris in front of you, is that if you look back to Psukim, so Balak never offered Bilam money. He said, Chabeda Chabedcha. He says, I will honor you greatly, which may mean money, maybe yes, maybe no. He never said anything about money. So the first one who said anything about money in that story was Bilam. So says Rashi, what do you see? You see that he was a Chomei Mamon Acherim. You see that he cared and he wanted other people's money. Because he brought it up. Nobody said anything about money. As opposed to the Mishnah and Avos, where Yosef ben Kisma describes this individual comes to him and he says, Rebbe, I will offer you millions of dollars. To which Yosef ben Kisma responded, even if you give me all the money in the world, it's not going to make a difference. I'm still not going to go with you. Very good. So that's one possibility. Your hand's still up?
Yeah, sure.
Want to give another answer? Well, hold on one second. We have another hand. I'll come back to you in a moment. Yeah.
This might be just the most obvious one, that if a Russia and Saudi say the same exact thing, could be perceived in two totally separate ways. So Rabbi Yosef and Kisma might be bringing out money and saying, like, if you do this, I won't, like, you can give me all the money in the world, I won't come, versus when Bilam says it, it's when Rabbi Yosef and Kisma says it, he's saying it's like Hashem, like he's not doing it for himself, versus Bilam where he is doing it for himself.
It's very nice shot. And it's one that relies much less on the text and just takes a sort of a greater perspective over here and says, hold on a second. Are you serious? You're really going to ask this question? After all, we're comparing Bilam HaRasha and Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. And obviously there's a difference between them. How do you know? Because we know more about them than these very stories. So when it comes to Bilam, where we know already he has a low life, we know he's an individual who will go ahead and sell his soul for anything, and he's an individual who will not hesitate to go ahead and to use his powers to harm and to hurt. So when he says, you know, if you give me all the money in the world, or if you give me all of his money, so you know that he means it. You know that he means it because that's who he is. That's the way he lives his life. As opposed to Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, who says over here, I wouldn't take the money. And how do we know he wouldn't take the money? Because we look at the way he lives his life. After all, as is described over here, he lives in a makom. Now again, it's true, sometimes he could live in a place of many chacham himself, but still be wealthy. The impression you get over here, Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma led a very modest lifestyle. He was not somebody who was overindulgent in any way, and therefore we have every reason to believe him. So it's a remarkable answer, and I've seen that brought down as well. You could also say, I mean, this may be a separate answer, but you could say that You know, sometimes you have to sort of look at the end of the story in order to understand what people meant when they said what they said earlier. So over here, just let's just see what's the end of the story. The end of the story, what happens over here? Bilam goes. He ends up going. In other words, the whole time he's hoping that he's going to be able to cash in on this. And that's what Rashi says over here, is Mechabe Maman Acherim, because you see, even though he says over here, I can't do anything without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, he goes anyway hoping that things will work out in his favor. As opposed to Yosef and Kismet goes back home. He doesn't go. So you see that that's not really what he's interested in. Very good. Shkai. Yeah?
Also, based on what Rebbe said, Rashi, you know that Bilam actually did want the money as opposed to Yosef and Kismet when he had the offer. He was only denying because that's what was offered. And he had no interest in the actual money. He was saying, I don't need to give me all the money tomorrow because that was what was offered to him. And he said, I really just want to talk to Bilam. Although he should have gotten the situation, you know, that he actually does want it from the Rashi.
No, right. The question is, how does Rashi know that? How does Rashi know that Bilam wanted more than Yosef and Kisma? So he's saying, because Yosef and Kisma threw in that he would only be in Mamantura,
but he didn't qualify.
Right.
He didn't want the money.
Very good, very good. So Bilam says, listen, I love the money, it's not up to me.
Right,
Yosef and Kisma says, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not interested. Very good, very good. Yeah.
The fact that Bilam was saying a little bit sort of like his house money, he's thinking of Bilam's money, Bilam's money, saying like, no, even if you wouldn't give me all of your money, saying like that, oh, I'm thinking about your money, but Kispa is just saying, any money in the world, like, I don't want money, like, go away from me.
Very good, very good. That's another pshat that, again, it really helps to look very closely at the sources inside, that Bilam says, if he would give me all of his money. So as he's saying this, we see Bilam looking at Balak's money, salivating. He has his money, his eyes on the prize. As opposed to Yosef and Kismet says, if you give me all the money in the world, when a person says all the money in the world, you don't mean all the money in the world, because nobody can get all the money in the world. That's clearly an exaggeration. When you speak in exaggeratory terms, so normally it's because that's exactly your point. You're exaggerating, you don't really mean it, so you don't really expect them getting it. This is similar, maybe, to the comment Ben Ezra makes in his commentary on Chumash, on the Isser of Losachmon, where the Torah tells us a person cannot covet somebody else's possessions, which Rashi mentions over here, that Bilam was Machabe Maman Acherim, and Ibn Ezra says, how could the Torah legislate feelings? After all, we can't control what we feel. So if a person desires somebody else's money, how could the Torah call him out on that? And how could that be... How could that be a sin? After all, it's a feeling. I can't control my feelings. So the Ibn Ezra is not completely true. The Ibn Ezra says that when it comes to things that are completely out of reach, something that it's not shy of, I can never get it, so people don't fantasize about things I can never get. And he gives a mashal of a guy, a simple pauper in the street, who never desires the queen, or the princess, because there's no way whatsoever that he can ever marry the princess. So therefore, she's completely out of his imagination. It's hard for us to relate to that as Americans because we live in the land of opportunity where, you know,
anything's
Barack
possible.
Obama and Donald Trump can become president. So anything's possible. Anyone can become anything. So it's really, I think today people actually can fantasize about just about anything and imagine it. Even Ezra says, in theory, you can't. And so therefore he says, if a person truly, truly believed that what you have is shaykh to you, and therefore, by definition, it's not mine, so therefore it would prevent it from ever having the feeling, the desire to have something else. And so therefore, very good. And then so that you see for the Yosef and Kism says, if you give all the money in the world, as to suggest, he's not really thinking about anybody's money at this point, as opposed to Bilam. He says specifically, Im Yitein Li Balak Melo Beso Kesef Azav. He gives me all of his money. Very good.
Similar.
Another answer, yeah.
Similar maybe to what Matthew was saying, is that in the Pasuk, Bilam says lo l'chal l'avor, implying that if he was able to, he surely would. Whereas in the Ben Kisma story, he says he definitely wouldn't in any circumstance.
Very good. Another very nice answer. Good. Oh, if I'm not mistaken, Torah Tumim also says that. I've definitely seen that pshat. He brings down two. I don't remember where else I saw that, but I definitely saw that pshat as well. Very, very nice. You hear what he's saying? Again, another one. It's helpful to look inside. Now, Rabbi Yosef Ben Kisma says, well, let's look at Bilam first. Bilam says, "Im yitein li balak melo beso kesev zahav lo uchala boras pi Hashem lekar." So again, beforehand, I sort of tricked you. I said, "Well, that sounds like a very frum thing to say." He's saying, "Unless Hakadosh Baruch Hu, even if Balak would give me all of his money, I could not go ahead and be over pi Hashem. I could not possibly go ahead and override whatever the Rasan of Hashem is." So that seems very honorable. But you're suggesting no, it's not, because what he's really saying is, I would if I could.
Yeah.
I would love to take your money. I would love to curse Klal Yisrael. But you have to understand that unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu enables to, I can't. But I would love to. As opposed to Rabbi Yosef Kisma, who says, even if you give me all the money in the world, I'm not going. I'm not going unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets me go. I'm not going, I have no interest. Rabbi Yosef Kisma basically reveals that his true ratzon, his true desire, is to live in a Makom Torah. And so therefore, it doesn't really make a difference what you offer me. I'm not interested. Which again, so many powerful points that are coming out of here, but that's a very important point, and that is that sometimes, it's not enough, or the ideal is not necessarily simply, what we do and what we don't do, but where our ratzon is, what we want. And of course, sometimes there's an inconsistency between what we do and what we want, and sometimes that's okay, right? Until shalol l'shma bo l'shma. Sometimes we do things even for, not necessarily the most sincere and genuine reasons, but we do it because we know it's the right thing to do. But over here, Bilam states explicitly that I would gladly, in a second, I would go ahead and violate the Rasan of Hashem. I just can't, but I would if I could. Yosem Kisman says, I don't want to. Yeah.
Building off that as well, Bilam finishes off by saying, last time it sounded like you're doing it to do a big thing or a small thing. So after we've established that, he's basically saying, oh, I'd love to do it, even though I can't, even to do a small thing or a big thing. Normally when you say, oh, even just a small or big thing, you're implying that this is just a small thing, and I just can't, this small thing I won't be able to do. So I think it's just an idea that maybe he sees that the idea of cursing Klal Yisrael is just a small thing.
Oh, very interesting.
Because why would it's unnecessary to say a small thing or a big thing? So I imply that this is, I can't do it even though it's just a small thing.
Right.
Obviously it's a big thing, you can't do it. So even this small thing, I can't do it. So therefore he sees the whole matter of cursing Klal Yisrael is just a
very nice. Very nice. Okay, any other possible solutions? Okay. I want to tell you a story, and that is that a couple of weeks ago I learned Pirkei Avos Mitzvot Mechamarav during the period of Svira. There's a minute to learn a parak every week, actually some of the minute all the way to Rosh Hashanah. But during the weeks in between Pesach and Shavuos, my shul, I learned a couple of Mishnayos every night from Pirkei Avos. So this question that we're discussing right now, you did the math, I don't know, it's probably about 2 months ago. A week or so before Shavuos. So what happened was, I don't know if you're going to find the story so exciting, but it excited me at the time. So there was a Mishulach and Shul at that night, which is not unusual. We often have Mishulach and Shul. We have a policy in the Shul, as many Shuls have. If a guy wants to come to Shul and collect money, he's certainly welcome to do so. He can wait before davening, stand around after davening. We don't let him go around during money. And the other thing is that when people ask me, the rabbi, the gabbai, to go ahead and make an appeal in shuls, so we don't do it. We don't do it for individuals, because otherwise, in the Deva Sof, there are so many people come to shuls, and that's it. So if the shul wants to go ahead and to support a certain project, so that's one thing. But if a guy comes to shul on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it is, and he says here, and he shows you a paper that's signed by all the Gedolei Yisrael, that this person has great needs, even if we're absolutely certain that the person's needs are real, etc., we basically tell him, you go fend for yourself, we can't really help you, etc., you're on your own. So we give him money. The shul will give him money, but we're not gonna make an appeal on his behalf. So he comes to me Sunday night, and he comes right before I get up to learn. He says, "Can you please speak on my behalf?" Appeal, and I said, "I'm really sorry, I can't." And anyways, I'm going up to speak right now, so I'll see you afterwards. And he gives me a sheet of paper which has his whole story, and it has his name, his address, and it has a tuda, etc. So I say over the Dvar Torah, which was a little bit of what we just said right now, and I go back to my shtender right afterwards, and everybody's saying Kaddish, and I look, and I forgot the guy's name, but he lived on Rechol Reb Yosef and Kisman. That was the name of the street. So I'm not much of a mystic in general, but I thought that was pretty cool. That was, all of a sudden I felt like, ooh, it was a sign of Shemayim. So I clapped on the shtender before Meir, and I said, "Bosai, generally we have a rule, we don't make appeals on behalf of anyone, but this nice Jew over here, he lives on Rechol Reb Yosef Kisman. And in the spirit of the very beautiful Mishnah that we just learned, you know, maybe everybody should go ahead and give him a little bit of kesef as a hug, as we were just inspired by this great person. Anyway, this guy loved it. He was like, couldn't have been happier. He like felt that he just, you know, hit the jackpot over there. But anyway, it was a cute little mice. I only have a couple minutes left. I just want to conclude with one more thought, just to sort of get sort of whet your appetite a little bit. And we can talk about this more throughout the week and on Shabbos. I'm happy to continue the conversation. I've always found the comparison between Bilam and Avram Avinu to be a very fascinating one. That's another feature of Pirkei Avos, where Chazal and Pirkei Avos compare Bilam and Avram. Chazal tell us we should be from the Talmidim of Avram Avinu, not from the Talmidim Bilam. The comparison between the two is not very obvious. Why Chazal chose Dafka to pair Bilam to Avram as opposed to Bilam to Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, it's not very clear. On the surface, it's actually unfair to both of them. You know, it's not fair to Avram to compare to Bilam, it's not fair to Bilam to be compared to Avram, but Chazal saw that they should be compared one to another. And the way Chazal say it, it's also Gemara and Sanhedrin, that we see that from both Avram and from Bilam, we see how powerful one's Ratzon could be. And when it comes to Avram, Chazal tells us, Avram HaKakelos HaSashura, and when it comes to Bilam, Sinam HaKakelos HaSashura, which is simply, probably most loosely translated as, you know, by Avram we say, sort of love conquers all. And then if a person, you know, has feelings of love for someone or for something, so it'll enable them to overcome great odds in order to achieve whatever objective they have. So we know by Avram Avinu, he loved HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much, he was willing to do so much, so he was able to achieve great things, he was able to overcome great odds in order to achieve his goals. As opposed to Bilam HaRasha, so he was so driven by sinna, he had so much hatred, so he also went to such ridiculous extremes. And I'll challenge you, I'm not going to tell you all the clues, because I want you to try to find them and time doesn't allow, but there are some fascinating... maybe coincidental, I don't know, but it seems to me some fascinating similarities between the story of Parshas Balak, of Bilam's journey to curse Klal Yisrael, and the story of Avram Avinu, particularly the story of the Akedah. You'll find that there are several references in the Pesukim which are, you know, sort of remarkable in terms of the similarities. And then if you take a step back, the overall story is one which has, you know, some very similar features. But to me, what I always found most fascinating about the two, and I'll conclude with this point, is that Avram, we know that Avram was driven, as Chazal tell us, by such Ava, by such love to fulfill the Ratzon Hashem, so he was able to overcome great odds. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him to travel and he'll come to Har Moriah. Chazal, the Pasuk tells us, Vayibayim HaShlishi, on the third day, Vayisav Avram, Zaynav, Vayisav Makom Erechok. He sees the place from a distance. How do you see the place? So, what did Chazal tell us? How do you see it? There was a big sign that said Har Moriah. No. He saw it because there was a cloud. It was probably a perfectly clear day, and there was this like cloud that was hovering over the mountain, and Avram saw it, and he realized that was a special place. So he turns to the two Na'orim who are with him, probably Chazal tells Yishmael and Eliezer, and he says to them, you see anything over there? And what do they say?
No.
So he says to them, Shvu lachem bo machamor. Stay here with the donkey. You know, as if to say, I'm going now with Yitzchak to a very special place. You are not worthy of coming along with me. You don't see the great kedusha that I see. So shvu lachem po machamor, which is like saying, you know, you wait in the car. But maybe even a little more b'shtach than that, because chamor, Maral says chomrius, that you're too overcome with physicality, that you don't realize the true spiritual qualities of this place. You stay here. If you fast forward to Parshas Balak, you read about Bilam. So the story of the donkey plays a very important role in the story, but it comes out exactly opposite. Bilam is so driven to go ahead and to fulfill his personal desires to curse Klal Yisrael that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a malach in front of him, and Bilam is so focused on his own desires that he doesn't see the malach. He's so close-minded that there's a point where even his own donkey is able to see the malach, but he can't see it. So, the irony, you know, when you compare the two stories, it becomes very evident when you compare the fact that Avram Avinu was so driven to fulfill the Ratzon Hashem that he was able to see things that normal people couldn't see, and Bilam was so driven to fulfill what he wanted to see, what he wanted to do, that he couldn't see things that even his own donkey could see. And this again sort of, you know, underscores a point that perhaps ties together everything that we said tonight, and that is that when a person as a ratzon to fulfill the ratzon, you know, the ratzon of Hashem, so a person is able to to achieve great things, and people can you know, tap into certain forces within inside of himself and perhaps outside, and be zochah to special siyata d'shmaya to accomplish great things. On the other hand, if a person is motivated to do what he wants and is going to do whatever he can to satisfy whatever the particular needs and desires of his heart are at that particular moment, so nothing's going to stop him. And the Chazal are very clear. Habala tameh, if a person goes, he wants to do the wrong thing, postal no. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to stop him. You know, the doors will be open and a person can do whatever he wants if he so chooses. So Avram and Bilam, while they may seem to be two completely different individuals that have nothing in common whatsoever, it could be that the reason why Chazal grouped with them together is because they both, you know, sort of faced similar sort of challenges and went on very, very special missions. One of them was able to reach way beyond himself in order to accomplish great things, and the other one couldn't see outside of himself, and as a result led him to his doom and destruction. I wish I could stay more, and Shmuz want to talk more, I apologize, I have to head to the library now, but I hope Rabbi Berman will invite me back again.
Rav, is there anything on why Bilam has enough home and not enough?